When you're disabled, you are considered a non-entity, and that is from an article that was written, that was published in the LA Times last week, titled A Battle for Rights of the Disabled. And on the commons with me today is Nancy Lubin. Nancy is the subject of the article. She is disabled, and she's been having problems with her homeowners association. And we're going to be talking to Nancy about that in just a second. But today, I just wanted to mention that today's show, we're going to be concentrating on the special problems that the handicapped have in associations. Nancy, are you with me?
Yes, I'm with you. Sue, should I take you off the speakerphone?
You're okay right now, I think, unless we... No, you're okay. You're okay. Nancy has problems with her hands, so it's very painful for her to hold on to a phone, and I really appreciate the fact that you've taken the time to join us today, Nancy.
Well, Sue, this is indeed my pleasure, and I appreciate the forum.
Well, thank you. Tell us a little bit about what happened to you. What's your issue? What's the problem? What happened? And where are you now?
Okay, my situation began 14 months ago in February of 2001 when I submitted a reasonable request to install brass numbers on my home. This request was sent to the Architectural Control Committee. It followed all the parameters set forth in our covenants, conditions, and restrictions. Never in my wildest dreams imagining it would not be approved.
Now, why did you request to change your letters?
Okay, the reason numbers. Why I requested the change in the numbers was because on the majority of the homes, the numbers are black. Black numbers are not visible after sundown. They do not illuminate. They are not reflective. Brass numbers accomplish this. And I require the services of Access Services, which is a paratransit form of transportation that a lot of the disabled use.
Mm-hmm.
And they are also federally subsidized, along with the American Medical Response if I need an ambulance. And that has happened to me on occasion when I've dislocated a couple hip replacements.
So basically, your concern was that if you needed emergency vehicles, emergency service, you wanted them to be able to find you in a hurry instead of fumbling around in the dark, correct?
That is absolutely correct.
Now, what's wrong with that? It makes perfectly good sense to me and any normal person out there listening to us today.
Of course. my initial request, and mind you that the chairperson of the Architectural Committee even had brass numbers on his home. However, my request was denied because it alters the exterior look of the community.
Wait a minute. The chair of the Architectural Control Committee had brass numbers on his house?
Yes, ma'am.
And would not allow you to have any on yours?
That's correct.
And you had a reasonable medical request for this?
Well, basically, it comes under the Americans with Disabilities Act, and this is a reasonable accommodation to my home. So then I appealed the decision, along with another association homeowner, and at the time of the appeal, we co-authored the appeal, I was excluded from executive session. I resubmitted my request, and it was then approved in July of 2001, and that's when the problem started.
So you did finally get approval to put up your brass numbers?
That is correct.
Okay. And then what happened?
Okay, then it was approved. We had our elections for our board of directors took place in August. The end of August, the nightmare began. I get a communication say threatening me that they are going to take down my numbers. I called our law enforcement and they said, no, that's a violation of the penal code. They will be trespassing and vandalizing. I addressed the issue with them. Then, a month later, I get another correspondence demanding that I take down my numbers because there is a question as to the validity of my architectural approval. And then, by this time, it is September, and I go on. So then, I called the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, and they sent me a complaint form. I completed that along with submitting an entire package with pictures, as there are upwards of 20-some units that are not in compliance. If there is a compliance of a mandate of black numbers, however, there is no mandate for black numbers.
Where did they come up with this black numbers from?
Sue, that is a very good question. I would like to know. Nobody has been able to prove it to me. I have read the CCNRs extensively. I've had other people read them. There is nowhere that it is mandated that we absolutely must have black numbers. It is the prejudice of the board of directors.
So this is something that just pulled out of thin air, basically.
Exactly.
Can you, before we go too much further, you said they said that they argued the validity of the request. What exactly do you mean by that? How can a request be invalid?
Well, that is a very good question, and I do not know. And they said that my architectural request, the validity of the approval was in question. However, the people on the architectural committee, it had unanimous approval. And they have been asked, all the members of the architectural committee even gave me an affidavit under penalty of perjury that this was approved. And now the board president is saying, no, this is not approved. But you can't prove to me why it wasn't.
This was not approved, and you've got an approval from the architectural control committee?
Right, and it seems that would take a precedent since it is in writing. And then, however, if I could just proceed a little bit with the story?
Sure,
may
I'm sorry.
I come to the, and be clarified. I did go ahead, like I said, sent the package to HUD. Our process moves very slowly. I went to our congressman's office, and they have assisted me along this whole pathway. And according to HUD, and this is an important issue, that the rules and regulations and any policies must be waived in the case of a disabled person for a reasonable accommodation, and that is what my request was. So no matter how you want to look at it, even if I did not have approval, and when I resubmitted my request the second time when it was approved, I specifically stated that it was for safety, security reasons, as I am totally disabled and require medical transportation for appointments and et cetera.
Okay.
And then, so then after that process, even after that, I'm still getting letters, and then I received a letter from the association attorneys that says that my... I was in non-compliance for putting in my brass numbers and to remove them immediately, which I sent the attorney back a letter saying, I'm sorry, apparently you are not aware of all the specifics of this. I do have Architectural Control Committee approval. This is also a reasonable accommodation under the Americans with Disabilities Act. And all my correspondence since October has included the fact that I have filed a complaint with the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. It is under investigation. I have also copied our congressman's office, and I am still being harassed. In December, I was sent a letter saying there was going to be a hearing, and I responded to that. What happened, one day I received a certified letter saying there was going to be a hearing. Mm-hmm. The next day I received a package with black numbers to replace my brass numbers before I even had the opportunity to address the hearing.
They actually sent you black numbers.
Black numbers to replace them.
That's nice.
And I wish you could see what the numbers look like. So
I can imagine.
For medical reasons, I cannot attend your meeting, and there is no reason to, because I do have Architectural Control Committee approval, and this is under investigation by HUD.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Then, this doesn't stop there. Then in January of this year, it starts all over again. I'm invited to come to another hearing. I say I will not come. We have a new management company. I asked the management company. I said, please come and meet with me. I will give you all the documentation. You will see that I am correct. Please take me to court. Management company comes out and meets with me and says, well, you know, this never should have happened. So I said, well, I want it resolved. In the meantime, I still have to go to this other hearing. I said, I will not be attending your hearing. So then I don't attend the hearing, and I get fined. I'm fined a $50 fine. So at the direction of one of our government agencies, I am told to pay the fine, which I did with certain notations. And now I have done that. Of course, the I went to the press with this story because this needs to come to the forefront. I feel that I have been singled out. I think that it is time now that our legislatures get in, request penalties for boards that break the law, and that will be my next goal in pursuing this, but this still hasn't come to resolve. Now they are trying to resolve it by saying, well, the latest communication was, well, it's okay, we had an executive session, and it was determined that we will not take further enforcement action against your unapproved brass numbers, and they're keeping my $50 fine.
They're keeping, okay, let me take just a second here.
Sure.
I want to make 2 points, and I cannot emphasize this enough, but fines have been found to be unconstitutional in 2 states.
Yes, could you expand a little bit on that for me, Sue?
There were two, and we've covered that considerably. I just like to keep reminding people. In 1982 in Virginia, there was a case called Gilman, Unit Owners Association versus Gilman. And in that case, the Virginia Supreme Court said that fining was a sovereign power, and the sovereign could not be preempted of that power. Unless it was in compliance with both Virginia and federal constitutions. So in other words, it was an unconstitutional act. It was a sovereign act that the association could not be, could not preempt the feds government of that authority. In 1999, there's a Rhode Island case. It was Foley versus, I can't think of the condominium association. But in that case, they actually talked about the statute, and they found that the statute, laws regulating associations that authorized associations to fine their members was unconstitutional. And so in Rhode Island, they cannot fine anymore. In Virginia, they've sort of playing games. We haven't been able to get it back to the Supreme Court. But there's an argument there that needs to be made across the country from one side of the one coast to the other coast, and that is that it is an unconstitutional delegation of police powers, of governmental powers.
Okay, so as I understand, when we previously discussed, you said it's an unconstitutional delegation of sovereign power.
Right. In other words, in the government, you've got all of these different branches. There's a separation of powers, and so it's not the same people that are constantly, in an association you've got the board makes up the rules, the board decides that you're in violation of the rules, the board fines you if you don't pay that fine. In many states, they can go ahead and foreclose for non-payment of that fine.
Correct.
And in the real world, that's not how it works.
Uh-huh.
In the real world, you've got the three separate branches. You've got the legislature that makes the rules. You've got the courts that, that decide whether you've broken the rules. Then they assess the penalty after a hearing, and that's your due process. I'm not an attorney. I probably should not be going into all the legal stuff, but suffice it to say that there are two cases. I will be more than happy to email them to anyone who wants them. Send me an email on the commons at cox.rr.com, and I'll be happy to email them to you.
Okay.
And, take them. If you're being fined, take them to your attorney. Have your attorney shepherdize them. Have your attorney look at them. They won't be precedent setting in any other states. However, the arguments are there. They're made for you. Take them and use them.
Okay, that sounds very good, Sue.
Take them and use them. The other thing before we move on, the other thing is you had said, and this is from This is a quote also in the article, and you just mentioned it, that when your case is resolved, when you're done with your association, that what you want to do is go to the legislators and request penalties for boards that break the law.
That is correct.
I got an email with a question for you. The question is, do you mean board members, like the individuals, or do you mean the association?
Well, this... Okay, that is a very good question that I would need to do a little bit of research on. But it would not necessarily, the board of directors is elected, and I'm not sure because remember I'm in the state of California, I do not know how it works nationwide, but we all come under our covenants, conditions, and restrictions. The board of directors is elected by your homeowners association.
By the members.
So the penalty would be that the board of directors has acted irresponsibly and is a is an abuse of power. And also, there comes into this, like in my particular situation now, they have had to go to attorneys, and every time you go to an attorney for an opinion or a letter, it costs the association money. So this is a breach of their fiduciary responsibility to our association.
So
I don't know if that clarifies anything, but I think all these parameters have to be brought into perspective.
So basically you're going after the individual board members for breaching their fiduciary responsibility, right?
And for mismanagement. And it's my understanding is, and please do not quote me, but I understand that your board of directors is responsible individually and collectively. In California,
okay. I've got some other stuff. I looked up because we're focusing on the handicapped.
And, correct.
I've got some other information here, and this is from an old common interest living column that appears in the LA Times. And this was a question that somebody had sent in regarding an 82-year-old mother who lives with her. And they wanted to put up handrails, and I think the board said no. But in the answer to that is recognition of the rights of the physically impaired was included in the Davis-Sterling Act, and this is California-specific, obviously.
Right.
In Section 1360, which says that subject to the provisions of the governing documents, the owner of the separate interest may modify a unit in a condominium project at the owner's expense to facilitate access for persons who are blind, visually handicapped, deaf, or physically disabled, or to alter conditions which could be hazardous to these persons, which obviously you would fall under.
Correct.
And I think that's an important point to remember. Now, I haven't read it recently, but I also believe that that same information or that same law is contained in the federal.
Yes, it is. There's also another thing, Shu, that we did not discuss previously. It's not addressed in my interview either, but it is an important factor. In the state of California, we have what is called Title 24 that has to do with disabled people and reasonable accommodations. You have, like, to the letter of the law and the spirit of the law, but this also has to come into reasonable accommodations in areas, like, for instance, my other issue here is handicapped parking, which is not modifying my unit, but it is mandatory to put in here, and they have failed to address this. Now they're getting a little bit more concerned, oh, well, we better do this. There's other areas, too, that this does come under with Title 24. You have a combination of Title 24, which is state mandated, and then you have the ADA, which is federal mandated. So the two of them combined are important issues. And I live in the city of San Dimas, and the city of San Dimas has been very helpful to me in this arena. And also the city of San Dimas, along with the state and the city, are working on my behalf, as well as the federal. Does that
okay? Yes.
Bring up another issue, probably. It seems like the more we get into this, the more doors start to open,
and the bigger the issue becomes.
And the issue, it is way out of control.
You know,
and I am so very pleased, if I may take the opportunity to say, that you have contacted me and that you want to bring this to the forefront and that you're an advocate on our behalf, not only for the disabled, but people that are living in associations. You are to be commended.
Thank you. Yeah, unfortunately, I live in one too, so. But do you, I've covered and dealt with all sorts of issues, big picture issues, horror stories, individual stories, results in where these things go to and lawsuits and the laws and all different aspects of associations. I've never really concentrated on how much worse an association can possibly be for someone who's disabled. I know that the weak are typically targeted, whether you don't, whether you're a foreign national, whether you're the elderly. I mean, we've had some absolute horror stories about the abuses that the elderly have faced in associations.
This is correct.
And then you have the disabled. It's just, do you feel that it's a lot harder for you? Are you at a disadvantage?
Yes, I am. I am at a disadvantage because, as I have stated, as a disabled person, sometimes you're viewed as a non-entity. It's like, well, she'll go away. She doesn't have enough backing. You know, we can't be bothered with her. You just made a very good point, too. As a result of this interview that I had, the city of San Dimas has asked me to come speak at a seniors meeting that will address the seniors in the city of San Dimas because this is an issue. Apparently, this was not my intent in going into this, but this is all around us, locally and nationally, as you can see. And we are at a disadvantage. One of the things, and I think this is true of seniors as well as a disabled person, we only have so much energy, and it exhausts our energy. It takes so much out of you. I cannot begin to express the mental anguish, emotional distress, and how this has exacerbated my medical condition for the last 14 months.
You know, I hate to tell you this, but people who've gone into this perfectly healthy are emotionally, physically drained and exhausted by the time they get through with this because the balance of power is tipped way over into the associations.
Absolutely.
Side. And they have all the big guns, It's really heartbreaking to see some of the abuses, some of the cruelty that seems to surface in associations from young mothers who are dying of cancer, whose kids have been given puppies to help them ease the pain and the associations going after them, to little kids who are battling leukemia and, they have a safe place, which is their little treehouse, and the association, of course, goes after them. Oh, my God. Property values, to old people who are suddenly find themselves alone with a small pet that doesn't harm anyone. You know, all of a sudden the board says, "Oops, no pets allowed," so you've got to go.
Exactly.
You've been questioned about your disability, right? By the board.
Yes, I was. I wanted to, one of the other issues here was I asked to go on the Architectural Control Committee. I was interviewed for that. The first question I was asked, well, what about your medical condition? The second question was, you have to be able to walk the community. And these comments I took offense to. I didn't feel that they had anything to do with serving on a committee here since I previously, a few years back, was co-chairperson of our social committee. And when I questioned them about it and sent them a letter saying, please respond, they say, oh, we're sorry you found it offensive. Well, in my article, the reporter had gone to Loyola Law University to one of the attorneys for disability rights and education and also an attorney for disability rights and defense fund in Berkeley, and both of them said they have violated the law. You cannot ask those questions. It has nothing to do with serving on a committee. I have been discriminated against. I cannot tell you how many times. One of the board members has called me gimpy, which, of course, I took issue with.
Well, I take issue with that. That's terrible. I'm
yes,
sorry to
is.
Hear that.
Right. The other thing is that, and it is a very slow process when you're dealing with federal agencies, but they, up to this point, are responding, and they're working towards my behalf. In the state of California, you file with HUD. HUD is the administrator, and then they turn it over to the California Fair Employment and Housing as the investigative agency. That is where this is at this point in time. I also have the right to file in federal court and in civil court, and as I understand, I can also go to the Justice Department. Shu, one of the things, as we just previously said, it's a question of my energy level, what it has taken out of me, and also, as a disabled person living on disability, we only have so much funds.
There were two in the article. We're running out of time.
But, I know,
but there were two attorneys who were quoted here. Linda Kilp, an attorney with the Disability Rights and Education Defense Fund, and there's another.
Eve Hill. She is executive director of the Western Law Center for Disability Rights at Loyola Law School.
Okay. Now, are either one of these organizations prepared to take the case on your behalf?
Is a very good question. This article just came out last week.
Yes.
Reporter Joanna Corman for the LA Times contacted me, and she said, let me give you their numbers. I will be contacting them this upcoming week. In the meantime, and I have no idea of her interest in it, but a very significant prominent attorney called Gloria Allred in California that is known nationwide has always been an advocate for groups of this type.
Uh-huh.
And I have sent her the article, and we are waiting to see what her response will be.
That's great. Well, listen, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for educating us today. And that's what the show's all about, is to educate people and let them know what's going on out there. And I'm sorry you're going through this. And
thank you, Shu. I appreciate the platform to state my case.
And catch you later.
Thanks a lot. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay, we will be back in a few minutes. And when we do come back, I will be joined by Kim Bereda, I hope. And Kim's from Montana, and she's also had some of the same major problems that people with disabilities seem to suffer in associations, in addition to all the usual problems that one finds in an association. But before we go, I think I've got just 1 minute. I wanted to let you know about a new Toastmasters club called the Benny Bow Club that's being started. So if you're in the Northern Virginia area and are interested in joining us or want to know more, please contact me. You can send me an email to onthecommons@cox.rr.com, and I'll be more than happy to give you some information about that. Let's see, was there anything else that I wanted to tell you? Oh, yes, very quickly, very briefly. Tomorrow's Common Interest Living column by Stephen Glassman and Donnie Venetian is about special assessments and privacy issues, and it's very good. I'm afraid I'm not going to have time to go into it, but there's some outstanding points made here. If you can't get it, if you don't know where it is, if you can't find it online, send me an email on thecommons@cox.rr.com, and I'll be happy to send you a link, hopefully, to the LA Times so that you can read it. But please stay tuned. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.
You're on the Commons. I'm Shu Bartholomew, and joining me on the Commons during the second half of the show is Kim Beleda. I think that's the way you spell it, right? Or pronounce it?
Yeah, it is.
Hi, Kim. Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Sue.
Today's show, we're going to focus on the additional problems that the handicapped have in associations. And you've certainly been run through the mill in your association, haven't you?
We have, but I think we finally sorted it out.
Good. You did settle. I talked to your attorney very briefly yesterday, and he said there has been a settlement in the case. But what happened? I mean, can you tell us a little bit about what happened with you?
Well, my husband and I own a condominium in Whitefish, Montana, in a place called Ptarmigan Village. And Ptarmigan Village is a homeowners association with, I believe, 240 units. And about 10 years ago, part of the board decided that they would put some of our units into what they considered to be a rental pool. And when they did that, unknowing to them, they became subject to the ADA and a number of other laws. Well, when my husband and I bought our unit here in 1998, the area that we were most interested in, which was the indoor pool, was at that time reasonably accessible. Well, during the course of the next 6 months, the general manager of the property proceeded to make it completely inaccessible, even though we told him exactly what laws he would be breaking if he did that, because they announced it in our newsletter. Well, they proceeded to do it. We did have a conversation with them. We asked them about upholding federal law, and their response to us was they didn't want to set a bad precedent.
A bad precedent how?
A bad precedent in they felt that our access and our lack of use of the property was due to my lack of effort and not because they made the property inaccessible. I guess they felt that I should have tried a little harder to get my wheelchair down 17 stairs.
Is that what it took?
That is for the outdoor pool, yes. And for the indoor pool, it was through 40 or 45 feet of 6 inches of pea gravel.
Now, they said you weren't trying hard enough to get your wheelchair down the stairs?
Yes. That was their whole premise, was that my disability shouldn't be rewarded financially by people who had nothing to do with it. That was their entire position. So we went to the Fair Housing Association. We asked them, or the Fair Housing Administration, we asked them about it, and they said, oh, no, absolutely. Homeowners associations are covered by FHA. We let them know that. We also let them know that they were covered by the ADA, which is the Americans with Disabilities Act,
right.
And they just flat out denied it. So after about 8 months, we got an attorney, after telling them that we were going to get an attorney, and 2 years later, it's finally been settled in court.
So you've gone through, you also requested that they refund you the portion of your dues that went to maintaining and providing the amenities, because
absolutely,
you were being denied that. And I guess they didn't take too kindly to that request, huh?
Well, that's where they decided that it was based on use, and the president of the board equated my use of a wheelchair to his tennis elbow and said that because he didn't... Exactly, that was our response as well. We totally could not understand how he came to that conclusion. But his argument was that he didn't use the tennis court because he had tennis elbow and he didn't expect to have anything taken from his dues. Well, just because I couldn't use the pool, why should I expect that I should have something come off of my bill for that?
But
and our argument was, well, I want to use the pool. I was able to use the pool, and I pay for the pool. I have a right to use the pool. I will get into the pool. Their argument was, well, no. And in fact, some of the comments that came out after the fact were that I should have known better. People like me shouldn't be allowed to live here in the first place.
What?
I should be thankful that there's anybody anywhere that I could live. It very rapidly devolved into something personal when it was never personal in the first place.
I think one of the things that absolutely horrified me, I mean, I read about your story in The Ragged Edge, and one of the things that absolutely just floored me was the questions they sent to you in the course of the discovery.
The ones wanting me to prove my disability?
Well, they wanted to know about, you know, every prosthetic you owned, what it was made of, the date you acquired it, the name of...
Exactly,
and
going
the
back 36 years.
And describe the component... what were they thinking?
I think they were trying to embarrass me. I think they were trying to make it so personal because having a disability is very undignified. There's a lot of things that you don't necessarily want to deal with, and you certainly don't want having everybody and people, strangers that you don't know, knowing what goes on when you have a disability. It's something that's very personal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they felt that they were going to try to embarrass me out of a lawsuit. And unfortunately for them, they picked the wrong person because I don't internalize my disability. I didn't drive drunk and make myself disabled. I didn't do something to bring this upon myself, so I don't carry any guilt for it.
Good.
And all it did was make me angry.
Good, because too many people would have rolled over. Thank you for pushing with this. I think
a lot of people would have. I was mortified. I didn't want to do it for the longest time, and I actually had to go and see a psychiatrist about it just because it was so incredibly embarrassing. And what would end up happening was, because it was a lawsuit, my entire medical record would have been part of the public record. So anybody at all could come and have a look and know my entire personal life, all because these people were breaking the law and they felt that they needed to put it on to me and try to perpetuate some stereotypes in society that people think people with disabilities are just looking for a free ride.
The guest I had on the first half is from California, and she said, when you're disabled, you're almost considered a nonentity. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is still perfectly okay to discriminate against a person with a disability, and you can see it by every time somebody putting a step in front of their building or moving their racks in a store too close for somebody in a wheelchair to get past. Absolutely, it is still perfectly acceptable because people do think that we are non-contributing members of society, and unfortunately that's a misconception because we are the largest visible consumer minority group in North America. We spend over $770 billion a year, and we could carry the vote. We're an extremely powerful group of people as a consumer group, and unfortunately we're very fractured just because there are so many different disabilities and everyone has their own issues. But if we were to coalesce into one large group, we would be running the show. And anybody at any point can become part of our community. Disability is the one true non-discriminating factor in the entire world. It doesn't matter how much money you have, what color your skin is, what job you have, what religion you believe in, or what country you come from. You can be disabled in a moment's notice.
That's absolutely right, and that's something that none of us should forget. You've got me really thinking here. With disabilities, I mean, we're talking about physical disabilities here, but can we expand that to maybe, say, a young kid who's fighting leukemia, or maybe a young mother who's dying of cancer?
Absolutely.
And I mean, would all of these people necessarily fit into the group that you're describing?
They would by default, I think, as an end result of their illness. So that is part of how you become disabled. You can be ill and then have the ramifications of your illness render you with a disability. Absolutely. And those individuals in that situation aren't included in that number.
Okay.
So if we add those in, I don't even know how big our community would be.
Because, you know, this show on the Commons deals primarily with problems within associations.
Mm-hmm.
And once in a blue moon, I mean, the problems are legion. And it's not, it's not often, but we're hearing more and more of people who are battling them because of unfair treatment. Basically, a young mother who's dying. I mean, my heart goes out to that family. Somebody gave them a puppy so that to help the kids.
Right.
When she does die, and they built a fence. They requested permission to put up a fence. The board did not respond. They put up a fence so that the puppy could go outside while the mother was home alone and sick after having chemo. And the board's going after them. They went after a young kid with leukemia, and his safe haven was the treehouse he built with his dad when he was in remission. And, they wanted him to go take that down as well. So I think the cruelty is there, but I think to certain people like you, like some of the other people who are disabled, elderly gentlemen who need a truck because they cannot crawl into a small car, and they're being singled out because trucks are against the rules and they're going to devalue. I mean, all this stupid stuff. How can you all coalesce?
I think it would have to be a focus point, and we would have to find an individual issue that affects all of us, and that's why we think access is the one. And with shows like this, this actually helps, because you did hit on it. There are seniors that are becoming disabled,
yes,
or less able to move around. I don't know the answer to that. I absolutely see what you say, what you're saying with the ignorance and the malice, because that's exactly what it seems to be. And in our board of directors situation, I even had a letter that was sent in response to the Ragged Edge magazine from the wife of one of our board members, who said that I was not being thankful enough because they built a wheelchair accessible path halfway through our village. Well, that would have been, and I should have brought them lemonade in thanks. This was her exact words.
You're kidding.
However, the wheelchair accessible path that they built was either down that 17 flight of stairs, that 17 stair set, or if I wanted to get to it from the other section of our village, would through about 800 or 900 feet of wood chips. So this wheelchair accessible path that they're throwing in my face and saying that I'm not thankful enough for, nobody in a wheelchair can even get to.
And the thing is, you used to be able to get around to it. They changed it to make it impossible for you to get anywhere.
Exactly. And their reasoning was that I am only one person.
You're
and
only
that came
one
out
person.
In a board meeting as well.
You're only one person.
I'm
so
only
it
one
doesn't,
person.
So it
but
doesn't
I'm not
matter.
Only one person. And that's something that they didn't realize, because there is another owner in our property who has advanced multiple sclerosis, and his wife is trying to help him get around, and they're seniors. He's now using a wheelchair and a scooter to get around, and he couldn't get into it. But because they were older and because they were new to being disabled, the energy that they had was diverted to fighting for his life and helping him just live. So to take on an argument like this, and especially of this size, wasn't something that they had the energy to do. So while I was only one person speaking out loud, that's absolutely not the truth. There are others in our village who need this.
You mentioned a word that we talked about in the first half hour, and that's energy.
Yes.
My first guest is a senior, and she said, I just don't have the energy to fight this. And you just mentioned the word energy. Is that why we're not hearing more of this? Are a lot of the disabled sort of rolling over because they don't have the energy to fight it?
Absolutely. Because our position is, and as you said earlier, that we're really a non-entity. If you look at it in a visual way where everyone's starting from the same point, the same amount of energy should push the same amount of people to a same level. However, if you have a disability, you're not starting at that same zero point. You're starting at about minus 50. And just to get to zero takes all the effort that you have. Just because people look at you and they automatically discount anything you have to say simply because you may not be standing as tall as they are. Or you may have a tic, or you may not be able to control your muscle movements. There's any number of reasons that someone will look at you and physically determine that because you have a physical infirmity that your mind doesn't work either, and therefore you can't be counted on to have any kind of reasonable opinion. That's what happens when you have a disability. Society looks at us, they say, they automatically think that we're all on welfare, or that we have no job, we're uneducated, or that we drove drunk. So automatically we have that perception to pass through before we can even come to a level playing field. So energy, and especially if it takes half your energy just to get yourself out of bed and into your wheelchair in the morning, to try to fight some people who will hold you responsible for that alone, and then still try to get an issue dealt with, it just takes everything you have.
The ignorance is just, it's just incredible, and the cruelty, we talked about that. And in this article, is there anything that you don't want to discuss?
No. Okay, as far as I'm concerned, this whole thing needs to come out because the board of directors was wrong in our situation. They put us into a lawsuit that lasted 2.5 years because they flat out did not ever consider that I might know what I'm talking about. And rather than just check into what I had to say, they discounted it completely.
Kim, let's take this to the point where you tried, actually wanted to meet with them, and they did set up a meeting.
Oh, yes, they did, up a flight of stairs.
And there was no elevator in the building, right?
No, there was not.
Was that done on purpose?
I believe that it was, because they knew that I was coming. And then after the fact, they said because I was late for the meeting that they weren't going to be able to see me. I guess I didn't show proper respect to the board.
Did you make it up?
No, I went, and that's what started the entire situation with the lawsuit, because what ended up happening was they came down from their meeting after making me wait with their coats on, walked into our now reservation office for hotel guests, which is part of this whole issue, and held my section of the board meeting in front of strangers. with their coats on, standing up. Not one of them even had the courtesy to take their coat off or sit down or talk to me face to face. They stood there with their coats on, looking at the door,
and
waiting for me to be finished speaking so they could go on with whatever they had to do that day, which was probably skiing or maybe even going and having a hot tub or getting into the swimming pool.
So you're sitting in a wheelchair. They're standing around you,
mm-hmm,
with coats.
Yes.
Ready to go out.
Yes.
They hold the meeting so that you cannot attend.
Right.
Isn't that the height of cruelty?
I think so, but they didn't see it as that. They didn't even consider it. They flat out just, it totally went over their heads, apparently. And I think it comes from an erroneous sense of self-satisfaction that they're healthy.
What can we do, those of us who are able-bodied, actually, and, you know, who may not always be? I mean, I'm very aware. I'm a former nurse, so I'm very aware of, you know, it takes a split second to change your entire life.
Mm-hmm.
But what can the rest of us do to help in this situation, to help with people who need the extra help, people who are being abused maybe a little bit more than the rest of the neighborhood?
Speak out. Speak out. One of the things that I used to do a little bit of entertaining, and one of the things that we learned in one of our improv classes is that your first instinct is usually right. And if you see something going on, say something, because usually that's all it takes. The individual who's being discriminated against,
mm-hmm,
if it's gotten to the point where they can't defend themselves, then people who are in a position to defend should speak up. Everybody needs to speak up. I think if everybody were to spend one day in a wheelchair, just go to your local medical place, rent a wheelchair,
mm-hmm,
and see if you can't get yourself to work that day. See if you can get your groceries. See if you can get in and out of the lunchroom at work. See if the girl at JCPenney serves you first. See if they even talk to you. And see what it's like to actually be basically at a lower level physically, down, see what you can't see, and see what people do. And it does change your perception of how you get through the world. And I think it would make a lot of people be considerably more aware of how fortunate they are.
Yeah, you've given us a whole lot to think about here. But basically, speak out.
And speak out.
Speak out.
If you see something, say something, because you never know. It's usually a case of bullies. When this sort of thing goes on, it's like it all started when he hit me back. And usually in order to deflate a bully, you either need a bigger bully or someone who's not afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it is. And when you have a disability, especially if you have a lifelong disability, you're socialized and you are conditioned to not make any waves, to be very quiet, to be very thankful, to be very unobtrusive. And unfortunately, that perpetuates the entire situation because you are afraid and you're not trained to be assertive. And then when the person who does have a little bit of assertiveness speaks up, then it's not assertiveness. Then it's the nasty B word.
Yeah.
So that's part of it as well. So speaking up is it. Speaking up and letting somebody know that you think their behavior is incorrect. It's inappropriate. It's not right. And a lot of times that's all it takes.
Did anyone speak up in your association for you?
No.
So
not on the board. A number of owners whom I know personally did speak up, and in fact there is another class action lawsuit still pending against the village.
Oh, there is?
There is.
And can I ask you about that?
I'm sorry?
Can I ask you about the...
That's a fiduciary irresponsibility.
Oh, okay.
Lawsuit that has just stemmed from this, that started with the investigation into the finances when we first asked about the reduction in fees until they made the pool accessible again. When they decided to tell us that that was not feasible financially, we decided to look into why.
Now, in the article, it says that it cost the association, you were estimating that it cost about $50,000 to fight?
Yes.
To fight you?
Yes.
For this?
Yes.
Do you have a final number on that?
I don't have a final number on that. That's something that you would have to ask Chad, our attorney.
Okay.
But I do know that the $50,000-ish that they were spending is actually almost 8 times, if not 10 times, more than what it would have cost them to actually make our property compliant.
Well, it was compliant.
When it was originally, exactly.
It was compliant. And you told them actually before they did anything that it would be a problem for you.
Exactly. And I also told them that it would be against federal law, and that by breaking that particular federal law, it was the Department of Justice that would become involved, and we could all lose our property. They could, the Department of Justice could come in and sell our property out from under us to pay for the fines that they could have levied against us. And this was my original argument that, you know, we own our home here. This is where we live. A lot of these people were using these as vacation properties, but there's a good number of us who live here. This is our principal residence.
Mm-hmm.
And for people who were using theirs as vacation and investment property to put our homes into jeopardy, we did not appreciate that. And that was the original argument as well, was that if the Department of Justice comes in, we will have no control over what happens here. And you don't have that right to do that. As a homeowners association, you have rights to do certain things as laid out in our bylaws. But you don't have the right to cause us to lose our homes. You just don't.
Well, especially since they claim to be protecting your property values. I mean, that's the one thing we keep hearing about all the time. In the article, it also said that you were headed for a jury trial in April and that any attempts to settle beforehand failed. Why is it that they always settle right before they have to go in front of a real judge in a real courtroom?
I think it's because they don't want the truth to come out. They hope, I think it goes back to energy again. They hope that they're going to drain you so far that when you finally get into a settlement conference, you're just so happy to have it finished that you walk away with the first offer and that you don't get into court. However, we are very lucky at our situation that our attorneys were very supportive, and we do have the support of a number of the owners that we just said, you know, we're not going to let this happen. You will not do this. This is something that I personally felt that our board was already in a bad position, and they were already not working our property to the... They weren't working in our best interest. They were working for themselves and using the rest of us for their own benefit. And that was my position at the very beginning, and as it just stayed and it got stronger as it went closer and as we got closer and closer to trial. So when we did get into our settlement conference, we were prepared to leave if they weren't prepared to settle for what we needed them to settle for, which was compliance with the law.
Great. And can you, okay, and can you tell me anything in addition about the settlement? Or I know a lot of them have confidentiality clauses.
We do have a confidentiality clause on a good number of the details in the settlement,
mm-hmm.
but what we do have is a statement which went out into our Homeowners Association newsletter this month where the Board of Directors apologized to the entire Homeowners Association for bringing the lawsuit or for having the lawsuit where it was.
Cool.
They did apologize to myself and my husband for any inconvenience, and they did put a timetable to have Ptarmigan Village compliant with the ADA within 6 months.
Great. Are they going to pick up your legal fees?
Yes.
Oh, good. So it didn't cost you, I mean, in addition, it didn't cost you anything financially. I mean, obviously it cost you a whole lot emotionally and, you know, time-wise. I'm sure it must have been an absolute horror going through it.
It was scary. There were owners that actually believed that we were trying just to get money from other owners, and there were some threats, there was some harassment. It was actually frightening, and it is still frightening. And we're hoping that when more owners read the newsletter with their statement this month, that they will realize that the misinformation that was coming from the board was exactly that, misinformation designed to maybe muddy the facts. But it is. It was a long, drawn-out issue. But even with all of that said, I have to say that I have a huge, huge sense of satisfaction.
Good.
Knowing that we did it. We actually stood up. And I think that, I don't know if it would happen again. I don't know if I would have the same energy knowing what I know now. I don't know if I would do that again. But I do know that it works. The system does work.
Well, I want to thank you on behalf of all of the homeowners in association, even those of us who are not disabled, because I think you've shown us, you know, you've stood up for your rights, basically, and that in and of itself has got to be good for all of us. And you've sort of brought the issues out to the forefront, and for that, I really am grateful to you, Kim.
Well, thanks for having me on, and as an ending note, you know what we call the able-bodied community?
What's that?
We call you CRABS.
CRABS.
It's an acronym that stands for currently regarded as able-bodied. And that's exactly the situation that every single person in the world is in. and who is not disabled at this point in time, is that you are just currently regarded as able-bodied. At any point, you could become part of our community and be in our same situation.
That's true.
Not that we hope that you do. No, we don't want our community to grow any bigger than it already is, but...
But it's a fact of life that it can happen. And
exactly. It's not in anyone's control.
And I appreciate that. I mean, I've always been very aware of that. So thank you for reminding us. And for those of you out there listening, remember, if anybody is being picked on or abused, or anybody, especially if they're disabled, speak up and let them know that, you know, protect them, because by protecting them, you're also protecting yourself. So
I agree 100%.
Thanks again, Kim. Thanks so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. I know this couldn't have been easy for you, going having to live through all this, but congratulations.
And thank you. And thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Kim.
Do you hear the people sing, singing the song of angry men? It is the music of a people who will not be slaves again. When the beating of your heart echoes the beating of the drums, there is a life about to start when tomorrow comes.